today here on ESPN Plus and live and underway from the Qatari capital of Doha, where it's actually not that hot, Hercules Gomez.
Is that why you're wearing that?
You're wearing a jacket?
Yeah, it's a light jacket. It's not a winter coat. Beautiful setup. Beautiful studio. Thank you, ESPN. We're here. We made it.
You made it back to a World Cup for what, the third time? Second as a pundit?
Yeah.
Good for you. Yeah. Very excited. Lots to get to today.
That's true.
In this show. Have you enjoyed the Qatari capital so far? Been here about, what, 48 hours maybe?
36, if
36, yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's definitely, you can tell, everything is brand spanking new.
It's not full yet, we should say. It feels very, like, calm before the stormy.
It does. Right? Yeah. It does.
But surely people will be getting here. Hopefully many of them are people who are watching this show, fans of the United States and Mexico. We hope to see you here in Qatar in the coming days and weeks. All right, so coming up in this show, we're going to talk to Sam Borden. He's been with the U.S. team, not just here in Qatar, but also throughout the World Cup qualifying process. So we'll talk to him elsewhere in CONCACAF. We got a big win for Canada. We got Costa Rica that didn't play a game. We'll see if to get that. And some other news from around Major League Soccer, and also Liga MX, your former team has a new coach.
Let's get
to the highlights then from Mexico's last game before the World Cup. Mexico against Sweden, the last chance for players to impress Tata Martino. And of course, it's going down in Girona, Spain. Teams lining up. Tata Martino is always under pressure. 18 minutes in, Mexico with a chance. Luis Chavez across. Herc, he was good throughout.
He's a good little player, man. Technical ability, great strike from distance. He's got that in his bag.
2 minutes later, Sweden almost score. Anthony Alanga to Matthias Svanberg, who doesn't miss by much.
Yeah, these defensive miscues continue for Mexico.
Mexico trying to get an opener before the halftime whistle. Uriel Antuna close.
He's just always so active, you know, off the post, off that crossbar right there. He's always one of the most active players that Mexico has.
Some big changes at the half. Andres Guardado coming on. He's now Eldri's all-time caps leader with 178, overtaking Claudio Suarez, El Emperador. Raul Jimenez also on at the half, 54th minute. Sweden go ahead through Marcus Rodden.
Yeah, now what you want to see if you're a Mexico fan, another defensive cue. They give the ball away in a bad area, right back down their throats, and Sweden goal.
All right, 6 minutes later, though, Mexico respond. Acha the pass, Alexis Vega. Yes, Alexis Vega to make it 1-1.
That is a sexy pass from Hector Herrera. And a good little finish, too.
Absolutely. Not something we've seen a whole lot of from this Mexican team, but a good finish and a well-taken goal from Alexis Vega, the Chivas man there. Sweden would get the winner in the 84th minute. A set piece.
Oh,
shocker.
No. You got to watch
Sandberg.
Those dead balls. Set pieces again. The Achilles heel for this team.
After that, let's hear from Tata Martino.
Con la sensación de que vamos a competir muy bien. Que nos vemos preparados para competir muy bien. Que los jugadores están concientizados para competir muy bien. Con el hecho de que más allá de una derrota vos entrás al vestuario y veas a los jugadores hablando de determinadas situaciones de fútbol para corregir, a todos muy involucrados en esto. Y lo que siempre dije desde el principio y lo sigo sosteniendo ahora, de las puertas para adentro hay un escenario que evidentemente no existe de las puertas para afuera. Y eso es lo que a nosotros nos brinda ilusión y nos da particularmente la certeza de esto que dije antes, de que vamos a competir muy bien.
All right, Herc, we have asked this question of Tata Martino many times throughout the qualification process, but is it yet another moment to tell Mexico's manager to get lost?
I could see why you would want him to get lost, but no, I'm not going to tell him to get lost.
You're defending Tata Martino?
Not defending Tata Martino, but that's exactly what I would say if I was managing Mexico right now in this exact moment.
As in, like, he doesn't really have another choice of what to say? Because I don't believe what he's
saying.
What
you don't want to do is freak the players out. You don't want to get them all wound up in their own heads. Now, why do I say that it's not a get-lost moment? Mm-hmm. Because they didn't play bad. They lost. It's a loss.
Let me ask you this. Did they play well at any time during qualifying?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Overall in qualifying, would you say that what they did was good? Like, in how they played.
I mean, they were the best road team. They were the best road team in CONCACAF. They were the best road team in CONCACAF.
What they did against Sweden,
what they didn't do well was play at home.
They did all of qualifying.
Well, let me sell you on this. This is why I think it wasn't as bad. If Sweden's a much better team than Poland, would you agree?
Did they qualify for the World Cup? Did Poland?
Sweden is a much better team than Poland. Would you agree? Just team.
I don't know that I'd say much better.
Okay.
Marginally better, but much better, no.
Fair enough. Marginally better. If you tell Tata Martino's Mexican national team, sign off that you will have 70-plus percent possession, seven shots on target, two of them will hit the post in this game, will you take that? Yes, absolutely. Sign. Where do I sign? They will take that.
You're saying that as though it's something that is not likely to happen. That's how Mexico plays every single game.
But they didn't, because in World Cup qualifying, they didn't create the opportunities. They didn't create opportunities in World Cup qualifying.
Yes, they did.
No, they didn't. They created opportunities like that.
And they were just as vulnerable in World Cup qualifying as they were last night.
That's another issue. Set pieces, a disaster. Disaster. But how they played against Sweden.
So they haven't fixed that.
Who was the better team?
Against Sweden?
Yeah, who's a better team?
I mean, did you see the first half
Who's a better team?
I mean, if we go by the better team, the team that has the ball more.
Pick a team.
No, Mexico was not the better team. They were the most dangerous team.
Sweden was the best team.
Yeah, Sweden was the best team. They were far more clinical. Absolutely. Absolutely. You say 70% possession like this is the 1980s and that matters, dude. Teams hand out possession. Like it's
They had seven shots on goal. Two hit the post.
How many shots on goal did Sweden have?
Two.
And how many went in?
Two.
Okay.
But if you can limit to your opponent.
The first half should have been a goal.
If you could only limit to your opponent to two shots. Now, what I'm trying to tell you, this is why it's not a get lost. Because if you're Tata Martino, this is what you want. You don't want the team going crazy thinking, here you go again. You keep losing. Look at all the outside pressure. Look at all these people think you're losers. You don't want that if you're the coach. You want to keep them even keeled. What you did in that game, you did good things. You ended up losing, circumstantial, but we can clean those things up. Now, whether they do it or not, it's a different question. But you can't, if you're Tata Martino, dump on them as well.
Okay, but isn't he a little bit talking out of both sides of his mouth if he's saying this now, but then a week ago we were so focused on all the negativity around this team, and it wasn't just Tata talking about it, right? We heard it from Hector Herrera. I think we heard it from Luis Chavez as well. It's clearly, Seb, they're taking an us-versus-the-world mentality,
which is the only mentality they can take.
No, they're saying that that's what they're taking.
No, that's what they're taking.
Really?
Because this, to me, is the emperor's new clothes.
This is a guy telling us that what we're seeing— For you younger people, it's the meme where the guy is sitting in a place where everything's on fire and is saying, it's fine, right? Everybody can see there's a problem, and Tata Martino is trying to cover it up.
Let me ask you something really quick, okay? If you're in that fire, in that meme, and there's kids around you, are you going to freak out?
I'm going to yell fire so everybody gets
out
of the theater.
Are you going to freak out? No, because then you freak out the kids.
I guess.
This is what's going on right now.
Yeah.
I know, understand what you're saying,
I get it. Yeah.
But as far as get lost, I can't tell him to get lost, but this is exactly the playbook for the coach.
I think everything that he says is a reaction to the negativity, and not even the negativity hurt, the reality that's happening around him. He's just lying to us. Same with Raul Jimenez. This is the guy who comes out and says, well, I don't measure my strikers by how much they score. If your strikers were scoring, you'd measure that.
I honestly, you'd measure that. Hold on.
I don't think he's just talking about, especially after last night.
I don't think he's just talking about Raul Jimenez there. I think he's talking about all nines because they're not scoring.
But after he waits 3 months for Raul Jimenez to
show up, that's a different discussion, and he plays 45 minutes, and he plays terrible, and I'm with you there.
Okay.
But you can't freak out the kids, and that's what he's doing. He's trying to keep them even keeled before the World Cup. You can't lose them mentally before you even get into the game.
All right, we beat around the bush. Let's dive in on Raul Jimenez. It's the first of our three questions here on Football Americas. It's a direct one, Herc. A direct one. Is Raul Jimenez, after what we saw against Sweden, ready to start against Poland next Tuesday?
Raul Jimenez is not ready to play in this tournament. He shouldn't be on the roster.
Thank you. Thank you.
He could barely move.
Is it too late to get a plane for Santi?
I mean, I don't know where Tata Martino gets off that Raul Jimenez could be 45 minutes fit.
See, yeah.
You know what I mean? Let alone be a productive player for himself. Yeah. Forget about scoring goals, Seb. Forget about scoring goals. What Raul Jimenez is good at, what he's very good at.
What Tata measures him by, supposedly.
What he measures him by, facilitating others.
Did that happen in the second half? Final.
No, he didn't touch the ball.
And
you know what? Aerial duels, because he will need to be important in that facet against Poland.
That's the one thing you say.
He was 0 for 5.
Right. That's the one thing you say. Well, okay, over the other forwards, that's where he has the edge. It's clearly not the case.
He's not the same player, Seb, since that incident with David Luiz. It's not something that we bring to his attention or Tata Martino's attention or any Mexican fans' attention. Everybody who watches that team play, watches Raul play, who's seen him at Wolverhampton, can attest that's not the same player.
Yeah. Can I read you some of the sad stats from last night? So it's his first game in 77 days, right? That's the context. He was the only player without a single ball recovery, even Memo Ochoa, Pat Ryan. Even Memo Ochoa, 17 touches in 45 minutes, zero shots.
So if you're Tata Martino, what are you looking for?
I'm looking for Tata
Martino. You just
want to
see that he can run?
I was wrong.
You just
want to
see that he can run if you're Tata Martino? Because it's crazy, it's outlandish to think that Tata Martino thinks he can get him game fit, sharp, sharp, with this under his belt, and he's good to go.
I mean, but even if he'd have played well for 45
minutes. Game's on Tuesday.
Even if he would have played awesome last night for 45 minutes against Sweden, would you be like, this is the guy to start? Based on everything else
No, but you feel better about it. And the fact that he showed you nothing makes you feel worse about it.
I actually think the fact that he showed me nothing is the best thing that could have happened. Because now Tata Martino has to say, no, Raul is not the guy.
He's going to be landing in Qatar at any moment. Why do you want him at his worst? You would rather see him do well than be like, that's a wasted
No, but
spot.
I don't want him to get the opportunity that he's not ready for. That,
but he's going to get
saying?
It if he's on that flight.
I think Raul Jimenez played the
last... Are we betting?
Yeah.
We betting?
What do you say? That if he's on the flight, he starts against Poland?
No, he's going to get an opportunity.
Okay,
he's going to get on the game.
$100, he starts against Poland.
No, that he gets on the game.
No, my point is I don't want
like
to see him on
did.
The field.
He's going to get in the field.
No.
Let's bet.
If he plays... No, because I think Tata Martino's foolish enough to do it.
Of course.
I saw last night a player who was not ready for any minutes in the World
but
Cup.
Seth, forget
about starting.
This is what I'm telling you. He's going to play. Mm. He's going to play. You would have much rather seen him fit and just rusty than not fit and rusty.
It was a little bit of both, for sure, for me last night. Raul Jimenez left a lot to be desired in his first match since August 31st. That's the last time that he played, of course, in the Premier League for Wolves. Question number two here on Three Questions. We move from the top line to midfield, which last night started with Hache, Charlie Rodriguez, and Luis Chavez. Luis Romo and Andres Guardado came on as subs in the second half. Perk, what did we learn about Mexico's midfield against Sweden?
Okay, I get the experiment, and by experiment I mean Hache starting in place of Edson Alvarez. Mm.
You think that's like a legit experiment, not just Edson's getting in late. I actually, Tata really wants to try that.
That's what Tata wants to do. He wants to play Hache Hector Herrera against Poland. Why? Because much like Sweden, he thinks he'll have the lion's share of the ball. Mm-hmm. Here is my worry. When you don't have the ball, when you got to chase in transition, who's the only one putting out fires on that Mexican national team roster?
Edson.
Edson Alvarez, yeah. Versus Canada, versus the U.S., the only one that was trying to, versus Honduras, the only one that was trying to, versus Panama and the Azteca, Costa Rica and the Azteca, the only one that was there trying to put out those fires, Edson Alvarez. Hache may have control of the ball, maybe better on the ball. Yes, I'll concede there. He is. But there's different facets to the game.
Is he significantly
there's
better?
There's different facets to the game. The facet where you attack, and then there's one where you lose the ball. What happens when you lose the ball? How you recover it. There, he's not going to be good for you. That's Edson. That's his bread and butter. Mm-hmm. He's the only Class A player that you have on this roster. The only player that you could think could get into a huge team right now and be a good player.
So why is there even, because for me it's shocking, why is there even a consideration, a discussion that he would not play, start, and play 90 minutes of every
game?
Because
that is trying to get cute. He thinks that they're going to have the ball so much that let's get better players on the ball. Let's do it.
No, that's over. I'm sorry. You've been in a lot of locker rooms.
I've been
in a lot of
coaches. That's
lockers. Not overthinking it. That's
of course
not a coach.
It is.
Totally.
Of course it is.
Okay.
I just told you, there are different facets to this game. He, in the same breath, Seb, he sat there and criticized Hector Herrera for going to Major League Soccer and having a bad season. Now he's going to start the very first game, the most important game of the World Cup. He's going to start for Tata Martino. If that doesn't tell you, if that doesn't speak to the hypocrisy that is Tata Martino and this Mexican national team.
Can we go over some other kind of individual performances and maybe do an impromptu stock up, stomp, stock down? Because for me, Charlie Rodriguez clearly played himself out of World Cup minutes, and Luis Chavez clearly played himself into World Cup minutes. I don't know what that role is going to be for Chavez, but I think clearly Charlie is not the guy that we thought he was, and he has been
well,
at the domestic
level. Welcome to the club,
level.
Sebastian Salazar. Yeah. You're about a year and a half too
late.
No,
he's not. I mean,
you're
he's
a year
not
and
that
half
guy.
Too late. Let me start with Luis Chavez.
Mm-hmm.
Luis Chavez is going to be a big player, and I said that. I said this 3 months ago, 4 months ago, when you said who could have a breakout tournament, I said Luis Chavez, and you're like, really? Really? You think he's going to make the team? Here we are now, okay? Luis Chavez not only going to make the team, but he could be the guy that benefits most from this tournament, from the whole Mexican national team. He is so good on both sides of the ball. He takes care of the ball. He's got a privileged left foot.
Bang
strikes
from
distance. Bangers. Good vision. Gets others involved. And you know what the most important thing I noticed, besides that he's very good defensively in transition, is the relationship that he is developing with Alexis Vega, who's going to be an important player at this tournament. But he looks for him. He finds him. He finds that open space. He's got that nose for goal. And when I mean nose for goal, I don't mean him trying to get at goal. I mean him finding teammates to get a goal as well.
One thing I think that we can probably agree on from last night, at least for me, is Eric Gutierrez was a notable absence. I think he's a guy that I've said this for a long time, maybe as long as you've been on the Luis Chavez bandwagon. For me, Guti is a guy who absolutely has to start in this team, given his
performance,
his skill set.
And you could see that.
I mean, but at some point, like, you're right. Tata's really a guy's guy, right? Guardado is a great example.
If I were to tell you that Guti only played 2 World Cup qualifying matches, would you believe me?
Yes, I would.
That's insane.
I would. I was waiting for him to get into the lineup the whole
time.
With how good he's been this year for PSV? Yeah.
That's what he's played. Yeah. Andres Guardado, who's already closer to 40, played 3 times the games that he has.
You mentioned Guardado. We mentioned the age. Let's give Acheacha a shout for that assist. It was a thing of beauty. But with him and Andres Guardado in this midfield pool,
unplayable together.
Okay, that's it. You just can't.
You can't play. You can't take that liability.
Okay, so then
you saw it in the goal that Sweden scored the first one.
Yeah,
they lose the ball and then transition right back down their throat. That's what's going to happen when you lose the ball.
So what's Guardado's role then?
A la Rafa Márquez. He is the leader on this team. He's going to be somebody who's going to be vital in that locker room. Mm. The Rafa Márquez role that Juan Carlos Osorio used, having him as a good locker room presence and using him in that pivotal game towards the quinto partido where you can get the most out of him if you can use him. Remember, it was against Brazil that first half.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't because he was carded, he would have played. That's what Juan Carlos Osorio told us. He's going to be in that role for Tata Martino.
What is that, a start? Is there a start in there?
I think there is a start in there. I think it's probably
really?
Saudi Arabia.
Wow. Okay, we'll see. Andres Guardado, then one of the many Mexican midfielders fighting for playing time. Let's go back to the front line because Alexis Vega is the man who scored the goal last night for Mexico against Sweden in the 2-1 defeat. Do you think that performance and really the goal, Herc, locked down a starting spot for Alexis Vega in this tournament?
Not just this goal. The last game when he scored a goal as well, he seems to be one of the only players right now just brimming with confidence.
Scored against the Iraq, scored in the September window too, if I recall. Yeah,
when the rest of the Mexican national team feels to have this weight on their shoulders, he's playing free. He's playing a flowing type of football. He's having fun. He's explosive. He's got a goal-scoring ability about him right now that he's not shown in quite some time. He's wearing that 10. He feels like he's a breakout player for the Mexican national team. He's feeling himself, and he's going to be probably the most important offensive player for this team.
I laughed at you during our production meeting when you said, he's the most goal-dangerous, player for Mexico. And some of that is
you
my...
You laughed at me?
All the time. Some of that is my maybe like anti-Chivas ways. And just generally, I feel like he's never been that productive. I think I look back over a year. The most goals he scored in Mexico is 6. Not over a season.
5.
Over a year.
5.
Over a year.
Yeah.
2 seasons, come on.
Yeah.
So, to me, that's like, if that's your best goal scoring, that's more telling
us. So, last year, he didn't score more than 4 goals. Last season, excuse me. But you know what he was top in the league for?
What?
Expected goals. And I hate that stat. I hate it. But it goes to show you on a team.
So, he's another Mexican that's not a good finisher? Great. That's
what this team needs. That means his teammates aren't good finishers. That means Chivas wasn't finishing because you expected goals, assist as well. Yeah. But this is a player that just is so dangerous. He feels football. He's got the soccer IQ. It's in his veins. Yeah. He's in that final third. He has instincts. It makes him play very well. It makes him feel things, sense things. Yeah. He's as dangerous as you're going to get.
The point I guess I was going to make is that if this is a Mexico in full throttle, he's probably not in the discussion to start, right? If you've got a Tecatito flying at 100%, if you've even got him back.
I think he starts over Tecatito.
Really? See, to me, the fact that he's a starter is basically a default. There are no other starters in that
position.
There
are 2 Tecatitos. Tecatito that was, 3. Porto, okay. Tecatito, yeah. MIA.
Yeah.
The new version, Tecatito Sevilla, that started turning things around, and the same version of World Cup qualifying Tecatito that we saw the whole cycle that was terrible for Mexico. That was one of the most criticized players, if not the most criticized player, for the Mexican national team.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think he plays over him.
So the other options are what? Antuna, Alvarado, Orbelin. I mean, none of those guys are starters. Maybe Antuna, you've long said.
I think Antuna's going to
start
again.
There's like a matchup where you might see him as a
starter,
I actually think
he starts probably Argentina.
Really?
Yeah.
Straight up, you just want to run at Argentina. You want that speed.
He's a very vertical player, wears teams down. I think he can get that start.
Real quick, one more thought on Alexis Vega. 24 years old, wearing the number 10, going to start. I don't know if you've seen recently, there's been quite a few links. Well, we've talked a lot about him, maybe potentially moving over to Europe and maybe elsewhere in Mexico as well. All right, let's get caught up on who Mexico will be playing on Tuesday, and that is Poland, who were playing Chile last night. This one ended 1-0 for Poland. They did the minimum to get the victory over
in
Chile.
Poland versus Chile. They were probably outmatched talent-wise versus Chile. Six players weren't playing, 6 of the regular starters. But good for them to get a win at home, to bring them to Qatar in some sort of confidence booster, if you will. But if you go by what was the game, I mean, Chile outpossessed them. They had more chances. They just didn't win. That was Poland.
Poland. Does that scare you a little bit if you're Mexico? Chile having 70% of the ball. And
yeah, a little bit like Mexico, Sweden, yeah. If you will. But exactly. You mentioned it, Seth. That's what they're looking for.
So Poland then, unlike Mexico, finishing up their World Cup preparations with a victory, 1-0 against Chile, the final score.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
A special time for this country, for us group of guys.
I mean, honestly, it hasn't really set in yet. We're all pumped, we're all ready. I mean, the adrenaline is rushing through my blood right now just to be out there.
Definitely a special feeling, you know, because it's a World Cup. You get that little bit more excitement to be here.
That obviously we all dream of as a kid to be here. And
it's been a dream of mine for my whole professional career and also my youth career. And I think for every player who's here, it's a source of pride for all of us to represent our country in the world's biggest tournament.
It's a journey, it's an experience that they'll remember for the rest of their lives, and you know, hopefully when they're, you know, in their 80s and telling their grandkids about, you know, the World Cup, they'll be able to remember it vividly.
All right, time now to turn our attention to the U.S. men's national team. And Herc, time to welcome into the show Sam Borden. You know him from the road to Qatar, been doing some great interviews for us in the build-up to this World Cup. Sam, thanks for staying up late. I know it's well past your bedtime out there in Doha. So let's start with what the team did today, because we've seen a lot of other teams involved in this World Cup having international friendlies in the build-up. We haven't seen that from the United States, but it looked like they got some maybe live sparring today.
Yeah, Sebi, it's actually, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I've been surprised that they didn't want to have a proper friendly. This is a team that's young, that's inexperienced, that hasn't had a lot of time together because of injuries. During the qualifying cycle, they've very rarely had each of the starters they'd want at their position, so I assumed that they would want to play a proper game, but I think that Greg Berhalter and the U.S. soccer staff decided, no, we want to sort of take advantage of the opportunity that we have where everybody is healthy, keep the training as controlled as possible. Tonight, they were on the field with Al Gharafa, which is the Qatari team that plays at the stadium where they've been training. They didn't call it a scrimmage. They didn't call it a friendly. They called it a joint training exercise. I don't know if that's like one of those NFL, you know, joint practices they do in the preseason sometimes. But my understanding from folks who were there was that it was pretty low intensity. And the idea, obviously, was to keep everybody who is healthy exactly that way.
All right, Sam, you've been following this team since you got here to Qatar, and obviously for much longer than that in the build-up to this World Cup. You've been going to the press conferences, you've been going to the training sessions. If you can, give us kind of a general vibe, the mood around the team, and then maybe what you heard today in the pressers.
Yeah, I mean, I think not surprisingly, the general vibe is one of anticipation. You know, 25 of the 26 guys on the team have never played in a World Cup. DeAndre Yedlin, the only one who has. And so to them, this is all new. This is the dream they've had for their entire careers. And to have a chance to finally be here, I mean, they're reveling in it. I think one of the things that's really interesting is that unlike most World Cups, and Herc, you know this, like, Here, they're unpacking. They're, you know, they were told, take your clothes out, put them in the drawers, put the books you brought on the shelf. They're going to stay there for the entire tournament. There's not going to be a getting on a plane and going to Rustenburg or Johannesburg or Manaus. They're going to play all their games right here, and they're going to sleep in the same bed every night. And so that's very different than what the typical World Cup experience is like. And I think, honestly, for a group like this one, it's probably a good thing. They're going to be able to get comfortable in their surroundings. They're going to feel at home, and I think that will probably lead to better performances all around.
Sam, who did you hear from today at the presser?
Yeah, it was interesting. We heard from Tim Ream, who I think is one of the, you know, obviously the most fascinating stories on the team, in that he hasn't been a part of the qualifying process. I mean, the last time he played for the U.S. national team, it was, I think, 14 months ago, last September. And so he said that he had made peace with the idea that it wasn't going to happen for him. And it was only really within the last 3 or 4 weeks that it even became a possibility that he might be on the team. I really enjoyed hearing that, you know, the team, everybody else on the team looks at him as sort of the grandpa. That's literally what they call him. He's 35 years old, and he's by far the senior member of the team.
Yeah. All right, I think we've got some press conference sound here. Let's listen in to what the boys said in the presser earlier today.
Yeah, there's a queue of questions that people have for DeAndre, considering he's the only one with obviously the World Cup experience. But DeAndre, from a perspective in the role that he plays within this team, he's such an important person to have around.
It's a journey. It's an experience that they'll remember for the rest of their lives. And, you know, hopefully when they're, you know, in their 80s and telling their grandkids about, you know, the World Cup, they'll be able to remember it vividly. So I think it's important that, you know, every one of these guys just tries to stay present and just be aware really of everything that's going on, because it is an incredibly special time.
Really interesting.
Well,
stuff
Tim Ream may be the grandpa, the group, 35 years age. Go ahead, Sam, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, really interesting stuff from DeAndre there. Obviously, when he played in the World Cup in 2014, he was about 21 years old, very similar to the ages of the guys, many of the guys on the team right now. And so he's got a real interesting perspective. He said to them that, you know, it's going to feel big. It's going to feel like this thing you've dreamed about, and you should revel in that. You should accept it, but also recognize that this is something that you've done before. You've played football, you've played soccer, you've played in big games. A lot of these guys have played in the Champions League. Don't be overwhelmed by the situation. And I think, honestly, that to me, that's the biggest obstacle this U.S. team has to get past. They have the talent. They certainly have the ability to play with any of the teams that they're going to face. The question is, can they handle the moment? Can they handle the pressure of playing on their sport's biggest stage?
All right, let's talk about those leaders. You've already said Tim Ream, 35 years of age. DeAndre Yedlin, the only player on this roster who's actually been to a World Cup. Do we have an indication of who Greg Berhalter's captain will be? Because he's sort of been rotating that armband when, in my eyes, it's always been Tyler Adams. What do you think, Sam?
No, I completely agree, Herc. To me, it's a no-brainer that it should be Tyler Adams. And it does seem as though Berhalter has rotated around. My sense was that in a lot of instances, particularly like when he gave it to Christian Pulisic for a game or two, it was almost to boost Pulisic's confidence, right? It always seemed to come after he'd had a tough spell at Chelsea, or where, you know, he needed a sort of a boost. Now we're at the World Cup. You've got to go with the guy who deserves it. In my mind, that is Tyler Adams. I think in an ideal situation, Adams wouldn't come off the field in any of the three games. He'd play 90 minutes every day. I'm not sure you could say that about any of the other candidates from the leadership council. For me, Tyler Adams should be the captain, and I would expect that's the decision that Berhalter will make.
Okay, well, let's talk about some guys that maybe aren't 90-minute fit yet. Yep. Maybe some injuries. Who are we watching right now? Weston McKennie, Serginho Dest, Matt Turner, where are they at in terms of their injuries?
Yeah, my understanding is that Turner is fine. I think, you know, he has said that he feels good. Everything I've heard is that he's going to start, he's going to play against Wales. That, you know, obviously he was frustrated to miss the Europa League games with Arsenal, but then in the end it was a good thing. It allowed him to be ready and set to go here for the duration. In terms of McKennie, I think they are monitoring that. It seems as though he's going to be a starter. I don't know that he is a 90-minute player at this moment, but I think you would expect that McKennie will be out there. Dest, to me, is the biggest question. He did individual work yesterday. It wasn't clear. Tonight's training session was closed, so it wasn't clear whether he participated or not. But I don't think there's any question, guys, that he hasn't been a 90-minute player in a while. It'd be stunning to me if he was for the U.S. in game one. And obviously, we saw during qualifying, he very rarely played multiple games in the same window. I think at most it was two. He never played in all three when they had those three-game windows. I would not expect him to be a 90-minute player right off the bat.
Sam, before we let you go, I got to give a shout to you and your producer, Jim Wataka. We have been using those Road to Qatar interviews, I mean, in every episode of this show for what feels like the last, I don't know, two, three, maybe even 4 months, even more than that. I wonder if there's maybe a favorite moment from all of those sit-downs or a few favorite moments. And beyond that, if there's anything big picture about this team that you feel like you learned over those conversations.
Yeah, no, that's, first of all, thank you to you guys for allowing us to share those stories, because it really was a tremendous opportunity to get to know this team. I mean, there's been a generational change in the U.S. men's national team. It's literally happening in front of us, and to get to know the players on the team in that way was a real gift. And to me, you know, when you ask for a favorite moment, one of the things that I really enjoyed was talking to Tyler Adams and talking to him about his dreams. At the time, he was still playing in Germany. He wanted to play in the Premier League, and he talked to us about how that was a goal. So to see him now succeeding, enjoying, thriving with Leeds United, I think back on what he said to us in the chair and realize that it all came true for him. And that's pretty wonderful for him. And I think it will bode well for the national team, because he really is one of the team's most indispensable players. I hope that, you know, all the viewers of Football Americas have enjoyed sort of getting to know these guys the way we have. And hopefully that will make the fans feel closer to this young team as they begin their journey in this World Cup.
You know what my big takeaway was there?
What?
If you sit down with Sam Borden, all of your dreams will come true.
He's like
Tyler,
a proud dad, this guy. Look at this, Sam.
The point case right there. Sam, man, really appreciate your patience. Thanks for staying up with us tonight. And we will be checking in with
Get
you
some
throughout
shut-eye,
the
big
World
guy.
Cup here on Football Americas. If you want to see more of Sam, you can catch him on SportsCenter, all over the website. He's everywhere. Sam, appreciate you. And again, shouts to you and your producer, Jim Wataka. Great job over the last year with those interviews. All right, so some interesting news there from Sam. He says the biggest question mark, Herc, is Sergiño Dest. Let's pretend that Dest won't be available come Monday. What's
Do I have
plan
to?
B? I mean, is that? Let's start there. Is it that far off of a drop-off from Dest to the next guy? Because I feel like Dest, while he has some
attacking
great qualities,
yes.
Okay, has some issues in defense.
Very much yeah. So has some issues in defense. He played 30 minutes in the last game for Milan. I fully expect him to at least start. Can he go 90? That remains to be seen, okay. But plan B, in my eyes, it's Joe Scally, and it has to be Joe Scally. Joe Scally is a player that's very good way, too good, I'm sorry, very good two-way player. Mm-hmm. Attacks very well from the left or the right, defends well in transition, good motor on him. I think he's got a good footballing IQ as well. Can he be integrated into that attack in the final third and help the U.S. men's national team? And I just don't know. I don't know about Yedlin. I don't trust Shaq Moore. I think Joe Scally would be my plan B if you had to go. And that's on both sides.
Really?
That is on both sides,
really
left and
him.
Right.
Do you feel like that's the same case internally? Because every time we've talked about Joe Scally on this show, I feel like we're the ones asking, why isn't he getting called up? Why isn't he playing more?
You know, you said earlier that Tata Martino has his favorites. Greg Berhalter has his favorites. And he also has those guys that, for whatever reason, he's not trusted.
Let me stop you right there. The outside backs, Dest and Robinson, whether you say those are Berhalter favorites or not, those guys are lockdown starters, right? Scally's not going over either of those.
But Shaq Moore made the list over Scally against Panama.
Okay. You think Shaq Moore's ahead of Scally in the pecking order here?
He was against Panama because he knew the setup, because he knew the U.S. men's national team. So why wouldn't he be in the World Cup if it was in that moment? to help them go to the World Cup. You would assume it'd be the same thing here if it's not Yedlin.
You've talked a lot about kind of your issues with injured players.
I have.
Dest is not maybe injured. Obviously, he's here. He's training. He's not at full strength. He started one game in the last 5 weeks. My usual thought is, and I think most coaches are like this, you build a game plan not expecting to have to substitute one of your defenders, right? That's
right.
Not really
now,
where you
But want. Now you have five.
Okay.
Right?
So a little more room, but
six.
How much of a concern is that Dest hasn't started and got the full 90 because of the position he plays and the likelihood you're gonna need 90 out of that spot?
Not much because of the way he plays, right? And you mentioned that he didn't start three games in a window, so he probably won't start three games in the group phase. So if you're going to use him for two...
And they got three other right backs on the roster, yeah.
Three other right backs on the roster, you would assume that would be a non-issue.
All right, let's turn our attention to some other matters in CONCACAF. Not just USA and Mexico getting ready for this World Cup. Costa Rica as well, although unfortunately for Costa Rica, their match was canceled against Iraq on Thursday due to an issue with passports at the border between Kuwait and Iraq. Now, the Costa Rican Federation had requested the Iraqi government not stamp player passports, but local border authorities did not honor the agreement, and so Costa Rica returned to their training camp in Iraq. So a missed opportunity for Keylor Navas and the rest of Los Ticos to get in another bit of work before the World Cup. Not the case for Canada. They played Japan. No Alphonso Davies. He got a rest in this one. 9 minutes in, Japan scores first. It's Soma to open.
Yeah, good ball over the top. It's an innovative finish, a really good, nifty finish right here. It just off.
Is innovative another word for lucky?
No. Okay. This is resourceful.
Okay.
It's not lucky. It's resourceful.
So Japan goes up 1-0. We know how good this Japanese team was. We saw them against the United States. 21 minutes in, Steven Vitoria gets the equalizer for Canada.
Yeah, Canada is just so disciplined on set pieces. They're so dangerous. Can hurt you in so many different ways. They've got some guys that are really, really good in set pieces.
Here's one of them. Lucas Cavallini on the penalty in stoppage time, Herc.
Do you have that?
2-1.
Cavallini, World Cup, scoring a goal, 90th minute, yeah.
World Cup and match days before the World Cup, very different.
That's true.
But props to Lucas Cavallini, who has made quite a career for himself. All right, so I don't know if you follow this guy on Twitter. Many of you do. Some of you follow me on Twitter, a lot less of you. We put out a tweet earlier today because we are stealing a page from the playbook of ESPN FC.
Who?
You know their segment. Who? What? Who are those guys? Extra Time, where they take questions from social media, from Twitter, anywhere you want. And we picked some good ones here, so let's get to them. The first one is about Ricardo Pepi. Okay? If Pepi stays at FC Dallas, does he make the World Cup ahead of Jesus Ferreira is not the question. We're going to go with the Berhalter question first. Okay. Ah! A ver, ¿dónde está? Angel asks, regardless of results, does Greg stay on or go at the end of this World Cup? Now, regardless of a result,
no, there is no regardless of results. If the U.S. men's national team get out of the group, Greg stays. Now, that's just that's not my wish. That's not your wish. That'll be what happens with U.S. soccer, with the U.S. Soccer Federation. If they don't get out of the group, and how they don't get out of the group will come into play. And that could be his last dance.
Okay, but what you did there is you put in a little caveat. You said if they don't get out of the group, then depending on how they play, it could be their last leg. So if they don't get out of the group and play well, which is totally subjective,
it is.
You think he could keep his job?
Yes, I do. I do.
Do you think he should?
With Ernie Stewart, Brian McBride, I wouldn't, but I think they do.
Right. Can I be honest?
Yeah.
I agree with you. I've had some off-the-record conversations with some pretty high-ranking people at the Federation. I think there's a path back for Berhalter, even if he doesn't get out of the group.
Yeah.
My takeaway from those conversations.
Los modos importan. There are ways, and they matter.
Don't standards matter as well? Like, don't you just have to say, hey, like, at the end of the day, results are results are results, and if you don't get out of the group, like, isn't that like,
I think the objective,
objective
of this group has always been 2026. It's never been 2022. It's been getting to 2022.
Well, then it should be regardless of results, right?
Well, it matters how you go out. It matters how you bow out.
Okay, I jumped the gun there on the Pepi question, but we'll get to it now.
Unbelievable guy.
From Jogo Taka. No, that's not him. Oh, yeah, it is.
Just read the question.
It's Jose Garcia. I want to give him credit. If Pepi stays at FCD, does he make the World Cup squad ahead of Jesus? Seems that Pereira got playing that Pepi transfer provided him. And will future young stars now be reluctant to make a move to Europe ahead of a World Cup? Lots to unpack there, but good question.
I don't think future young stars will be reluctant to make the move, nor should they. But man, does this make you think. And
they should be more picky about the move.
Hold on. Dan Hunt, the owner
of FC Dallas,
of FC Dallas, did this interview, and this article came out months before he went about not going, and it could cost him, and people were saying, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Jurgen Klinsmann was on our very show.
Well, Dan Hunt has a motive to say that.
Of course he does, but Jurgen Klinsmann doesn't. Mm-hmm. And he was on this very show, and you said where you go matters. He said the same thing, not only where you go, but when you go, because it could blow back in your face, and man, did it blow back in his face. I don't agree with it. Yeah. I think he did enough to be there, both in World Cup qualifying and in the Eredivisie, but he's not there. So if he doesn't go, you have to assume that Jesus Ferreira doesn't blossom the way he blossoms, because he's not the nine. It's
Ricardo Pepi. Interesting. That's interesting, is that if Pepi stays, maybe it blocks the path for Ferreira. Although, Pepi, before he leaves for Dallas, Ferreira's already getting called into the national team, and we were already starting to hear some things that Greg Berhalter liked the idea of a Jesus Ferreira false nine.
Yes.
Pre-Augsburg. So
yeah.
I think that idea was already percolating. Now he has a great season at FC Dallas, and it allows the idea to really grow in Greg Berhalter's head.
If he's at FC Augsburg and he's banging in goals, right, it doesn't matter who's behind
him. Or if
him.
He goes somewhere else and is banging in goals.
It doesn't matter.
It's not the move. It's the timing of the move and the place that he went and then how it went there. So unfortunate for Ricardo Pepi. A lot of people thought that he would be here in Qatar. Speaking of Qatar, our last question here has to do with the country that is hosting this World Cup. Jogotaka now asks, what are your initial impressions about Qatar? You've only been there a day or so, but what has stood out or surprised you thus far?
What has surprised me thus far? That you have enough money, you can do anything. That really is.
Things are very expensive here.
Not so only are they very expensive,
if you're a fan,
they're lavish,
you made the trip yet,
but
bring some extra
you can
cash.
Tell everything's brand new.
Yeah.
Like literally, like maybe finished this week.
Yeah.
You know?
My apartment, where I'm staying, is beautiful, but new.
There are steps on the way up here that are still being finished as we speak. There are very impressive parts of this city that I have seen. But my overall impressions is, man, can you do a lot with money?
Yes, you can do a lot with money. So one thing that I would say is I was really prepared for the worst in terms of climate.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be horrifically hot day long. Let's give people an idea, right? Like, you see that the sky is dark behind us. It gets dark here at, what, about 4:45, 5 p.m. local time.
Yep.
The way the schedule is set up for this tournament, there's really only going to be that first game. I believe it's like the 5 a.m.
And they're
Eastern
all AC'd
game.
As well. So.
Right. But that first game that's really going to be, like, played in conditions that are hot.
Yeah.
Other than that, it gets dark here and it cools off a lot. I think that's definitely worth stating. The other thing that I've noticed is there's really nobody here
yet.
Yeah,
that's the one thing. Yeah. There's no ambiance yet. It doesn't feel like the World Cup yet. I don't expect people to come 3-4 days before the tournament kicks off.
The first game.
Right. Yeah. Only us idiots will do that. but I'm hoping it picks up in the ambiance.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, my big memories of Russia are the Peruvian fans, the Mexican fans.
Brazilians.
Like everybody. And, you know, that's not here yet. But when it gets here, Herc, I tell you what, this place is going to absolutely be buzzing. So that's it for tonight's show here from Doha, Qatar. He's Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Thanks for watching. And by the way, we should probably tell you about our schedule the rest of the way, right? Our first show of the run of the World Cup is actually going to be Sunday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific. And we will be doing a show every single day. From
Let's
this
go!
Set at that time, with maybe one exception, right after the Argentina-Mexico game, but we'll fill you in on that as
Did you see Hugo Sanchez out there?
I did see Hugo Sanchez, man. Literally, everybody
Hugo,
who's anybody from the ESPN world
right now,
is here, and we'll bring them on Football Americas throughout the World Cup. Thanks for watching.
We're best friends.
We'll do this again. Great shirt, by the way. Show them what you're wearing.
JJ!
What year is it?